Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If, though, this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give our discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. Since the end of last year, there's been a lot of talk and hype about the exciting world of AI and, of course, its potential impact on marketing. The main culprit behind the recent wave of buzz is ChatGPT, launched into public beta at the end of November by San Francisco-based OpenAI, the creator of DALL-E 2 and Whisper AI. By December the 4th, 2022, ChatGPT already had over 1 million users. Now, as a technologically curious and future-orientated bunch, marketers rushed to experiment with the language model, and some, of course, came back hailing a new dawn of marketing, and some came back and said, don't on any account believe the hype. I'm joined today by brand strategist and creative strategy educator Uri Baruchin, who has been experimenting with the buzzworthy language model that's been making those headlines. I met Uri to chat about his experience using ChatGPT, including the quality of its outputs and whether or not it lives up to the hype. Uri, welcome back to our podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Dave. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Now, look, I've known you for quite a long time, but I'm sure some of our listeners will wonder, why have we invited Uri Baruchin to talk on this topic? Because Uri Baruchin is not an AI or tech expert after all. So tell us, why did you become so fascinated with ChatGPT? And what's unique about your perspective? I might almost ask, why are you here?
Right. So hey, I mean, I'm going to come clean. I am not an AI expert. But we have to keep in mind that with ChatGPT and other language models, even the people who develop them can't always explain how they come up with answers and why they succeed in one thing and fail in another. Now, I've always been a bit of a geek and a power user of whatever new technology tools I'm given access to. My career goes back to the early days of new media and digital marketing. And in fact, I shifted to brand strategy through digital roles in the early noughties. And I've been online since 1993. So I actually used pre-browser internet.
Wow.
And consequently, I have to say, unlike many of my peers from the time, they are always kind of like an evangelist of whatever happens. But I'm quite hype resistant. I think a few of our listeners may remember how browsers encouraged the growth of the web as we know it and made the internet more accessible and more useful. But more of you will probably recall how Google was the first search engine that felt like it actually worked. And back then, I wasn't a search engine developer, but I probably realized before many other users how Google would change the ways we do desk research as marketers, for example, and it did. And later, how it changed how brands fight for attention or engage with audiences. And I really think this is such a moment, right? It's the first public access to a highly imperfect new technology space. And also, after many years as a strategist, including managing and mentoring other people in the discipline, I know it's not enough to be a good thinker, right? You have to be good at thinking about thinking. So when people suddenly say there's a machine that can replace a lot of the work that requires the thinking that we do for a living, I just had to know what's going on and what's possible. And I admit it turned into a bit of an obsession for me.
Okay, so here you are. So let's get down to it. How much marketing and strategy work can we trust to this ChatGPT thing in order that it's going to deliver at a reasonable level? Is ChatGPT ready today for mission critical tasks?
Right. So I think that's an interesting question, because in business, we would rarely trust anything mission critical to a single point of failure, right? And let alone a young technology like this one. So of course not, right? Nothing business critical yet. And in fact, one of the interesting things about using it is that you have to really stay on your toes and have some expertise in whatever you're working on, or be ready to do a lot of fact checking. And yet there's so much you can ask you to do, and the results would often absolutely surprise you.
Okay, but you and I have been around long enough to know there are two types of surprises, right? Good and bad. So which is this?
Right. So which kind of surprise? Good surprise, bad surprise? Well, both. And I think that's part of what's interesting. So if I may make a little detour here, you see, I mean, language models are very different from what we've been used to with search engines and other knowledge tools. Language models are basically fed vast amounts of text, and then they are trained on them. They develop a type of algorithmic understanding of how text typically works. So they start figuring out what kind of words follow one another, what sort of information fragments fit together, and so on. So unlike a search engine, they don't retrieve or find an answer, they generate it. What they give us is an approximation of what we ask for. They don't quote knowledge, they paraphrase it. But then again, this is not just some smart autocomplete like on your phone, right? They use patterns in that vast ocean of data. Imagine an ocean where the full content of Wikipedia is just a drop. These are much, much larger data sets. So this is on some level an attempt to analyze not just the more significant parts of the internet, but an additional massive chunk of humanity's knowledge. And this includes many quality text databases. You ask the robot, do you know this? Do you know that? It quite often says, yeah, I know it. I have the full content of that, from movie scripts to whole curriculums of national education programs. And then with all that information, the AI attempts to identify patterns and generate new content based on the model's machine learning of the way language-based knowledge works. So the weird thing here is that language models don't really know anything in the sense we do, although they quite often give us the impression that they do. In fact, I'd say it's pretty clear that ChatGPT has a much better understanding of what you want to say when you communicate with it than it is at delivering what you want. I mean, its ability to process natural language input is like nothing we've seen before. You just talk to it, right? I mean, it's astonishing. I would actually say that for experienced users like myself, it actually takes a while to break the habit of talking down when right. I mean, we have a habit that when you put keywords into a text box or even natural language, you have to dumb it down because we're used to applications not understanding us. But here you can be completely conversational.
And that is really interesting. And I don't doubt that there'll be many future tech platforms that are going to be able to use that ability. But here right now, in marketing in 2022, what is the use case? You said It's inconsistent in terms of giving us what we want. So what can it give us now?
Okay, so here's where it starts being a little bit confusing, because building on what I just said about language models, in theory, ChatGPT can generate anything where the answer can come in text form. Okay. So you can ask it questions and you can ask it to explain concepts at different age levels. You can ask it to create brand messaging based on a briefing document or a messaging hierarchy. You can ask it to develop go-to-market strategies and analyze qual market research data. You can feed it interview transcripts and ask it to identify themes. You can ask it for the common problems customers face in a sector. You can ask it to come up with positioning options. You can ask it to rewrite your manifesto into a mission statement or suggest brand values based on your About Us page on your website. You can ask it to turn a document into a PowerPoint outline and suggest, in words, the best illustrations for each slide. It can write blog articles, media posts, press releases, and or any one of those based on any one of those. It can rewrite your emails for clarity and suggest new social media post ideas based on your best performing ones. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. All this is available right now, instantly. So all those things are generated more or less in front of your eyes, and for the time being, for free, if you just ask it with or without additional text as input. And across all those things, you can ask it to then adjust it to different styles and audiences, choose different perspective, or even role play. And I keep discovering ways to make it consider all sort of contextual aspects. So on some level, the only limit is your imagination.
I've got that. That sounds absolutely amazing. I know you very well. There is a but coming here.
Okay. Well, indeed, Dave. Indeed, there is a very big but, and I cannot lie, as the song goes. Overall, ChatGPT performed better than I had expected in many marketing and strategy tasks, although the quality, and that is key, right? The quality of the outputs varied depending on the jobs. And still, I'd say right now and in the foreseeable future, that's the bad news, right? The artificial aspect in artificial intelligence dominates over the intelligence aspect of things.
Okay, I'm going to need you to elaborate.
What does that mean? So because the answers are generated, right, how I just explained how the fundamental technology works, they rely on general patterns in this unfathomable ocean of knowledge that it has been fed, right, and has been trained on. So it's much better at generating the most common and most often almost cliched things rather than anything specific, smart, or original. So if you ask it for the problems your customers face, or market trends, or positioning territories, you'll get the most obvious and generic answers. So those blog posts we mentioned can feel quite dull. And you'll certainly want to edit them, and they can sometimes feel even a little bit robotic in how they're phrased. And when it offers ideas, there are often very obvious ideas, and you have to eliminate a lot of that output, and it kind of like can be repetitive in a lot of these ideas, especially if you ask for a lot of ideas, and let alone when you go into positioning territories or campaign ideas. It just feels like the most obvious and cliched things. I think the most surprising result from my experience with ChatGPT was the speed and efficiency with which it was able to generate ideas and responses, right? There were not always perfect responses, but the sheer volume of ideas it was able to produce was impressive. Now, I admit, quantity is sometimes quality, but quality, real quality is critical, right, in our business when it comes to the more strategic and creative aspects of marketing, as well as those requiring deeper understanding and analysis, quality is critical. Now, I would even go even further to say that for something that some of the pundits suggest would be a Google killer, it's a pretty shit research tool, right? Especially once you need to go deeper into niche areas and specific questions. The more niche and specific your questions are, it will then start doing really weird things, right? It will invent papers that don't exist. It will assign real books to the wrong author name or invent completely fictitious books that have never been written. And when you call it out, it will argue with you, or it will just replace one fallacy with another new fallacy.
So it sounds like it just basically goes insane.
It goes insane. It actually, the AI scientists call that hallucinating, right? That's the nature of this technology. The more niche the subject, the more it might simply generate something, anything. Mm. And keep in mind that right now, the technology cannot cite sources. And I hope that will happen at some point soon. I mean, this, after all, we have to keep that in mind, right? This is an engine creating approximations rather than copies of the knowledge it has been trained on. Unlike search engines, right? It doesn't quote, it generates. Hmm. And so you can't tell which specific parts of the approximation will be like the source and which will be different. And the closer you zoom in, if you think like if you think about, that is actually a New Yorker analogy. If you think about JPEGs that are a loss, they're not a lossless format. The closer you zoom in, and in marketing and research, zooming in is one of the main things we do. But the closer you zoom in, the higher the, if to continue the analogy, the fidelity variance is going to be. And that is quite dangerous. So, and at the same time, it is programmed to be really ambitious, right? Its ambition to help knows no bounds, and it doesn't let its limits stop it, because there's no metacognition here, right? It's metacognition capacity, perhaps one of the most important things for a strategist, right? Humans, good, you know, smart humans know what they don't know. But hey, you know, I mean, I have worked with some humans that tend to be overconfident like that too. So another thing is that it's also not good at calling out who's right or who is the authority on a subject. If you ask it about a contested topic, it gives a very on the fence answer, right? So, you know, if you don't expect it to boil down the whole of human knowledge to end the generational affinity versus life stage debate, or to have a clear preference between differentiation and distinction. And not just authority, but even popularity, right? Like popularity and authority are not the same, but even with popularity, it doesn't have Google's PageRank to help it, but rather it has its own understanding of content and language patterns. So this leads to more of what's known as hallucinations, where it will supply a false fact and sometimes even insist almost comically on its truth. Or the another danger is what's called AI drift, where it goes on a tangent based on the imperfect ways it reads patterns, and where other sources of feedback create loops that reinforce falsehoods and actually deteriorate the average quality of the answers. And AI scientists, engineers, and developers are still figuring out how to mitigate some of those things.
Great. So here in 2023, welcome to yet another source of disinformation in the world.
You know, I agree. It's pretty worrying, because as anyone who's been on LinkedIn over the last couple of months can tell, spammers absolutely love ChatGPT, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like the more low level spamming a marketing professional is, the more likely is they are to think that ChatGPT is the second coming. Mm-hmm. Because it can generate reams of cheap content kind of like content farm fodder for search engines and social media, and those type of marketeers, and they don't care about the quality as long as it creates something that search engine algorithms love it. And trolls and bad actors, you know, are even worse, right? I mean, although OpenAI is trying to limit bad faith usage, but imagine if this content ends up on the internet and then gets pulled again into the next version of the training data and training sets, and it creates feedback loops that reinforce those falsehoods once they get out. Oh my God. Okay. But that's another story, and that's kind of like scary.
We'll do that in the next podcast. So it creates a lot of stuff, right? But yeah. Is it really creative, would you say, on any level?
So, you know, that is one of the things that fascinated me the most. And I would say, I don't think it's creative in the way we tend to think about creativity. Unless it's creativity at a very basic and generic level. In one experiment in creativity, I asked it to add a new verse to a famous poem. And it did so, you know, adequately. But when did any brand basically said needed create a creative agency with adequate results? So, you know, it did so adequately. It was quite articulate at explaining why it wrote in the style. So it could explain, this is the style of this poet, so that's what I tried to do. And I showed it to a proper writer friend, and she looked at it and said, yeah, he's like a clever 12 years old. And I agree, right? I mean, personally, I don't think it will mature as quickly as some people hype. I mean, this it's worth thinking about what creative strategy is for a moment, right? On deeper tasks, creative strategy and the best of marketing strategy and planning is about identifying and exploiting opportunity spaces, right? You start by creating a map of the market to orientate yourself, and then you look for treasure. Ideally, you look for areas with a lot of treasure left that others find hard to get to, and you have an advantage in, right? That's the oldest idea in strategy. But the way language models work means they actually gravitate towards the obvious patterns, the more emergent dominant patterns in the content they've been trained on. So they go for the overmined territories, and they find it hard to imagine disruption unless you feed them with it. So essentially, the breakthroughs are still on you even when you use a tool like ChatGPT. And even with research, you get more obvious stuff. I mean, imagine you'd get a ready-made summary of the first 10 Google results. I mean, theoretically, that is useful as long as there are not too much disinformation there. But in marketing, that's not always where the answer is, right? You need new discoveries. You need to make new connections. And this, putting aside the issue of falsehoods that come, that starts coming out the closer you get. So at the end of the day, it's a little bit, I mean, the analogy I keep coming back to, and I don't want to hurt anyone, but it's a little bit like having access to a relentless intern who is keen to be helpful, who's had an excellent education and writes very clearly and articulately, and knows a lot, and somehow is sometimes inexplicably dumb and makes rookie mistakes while being overconfident. So if you had access to an intern such as this, you want to utilize them as much as possible because it's easy, and at this point it's almost free. But you have to stay on your toes in case they must mess up. And on the other end, it's also nothing like an intern or a junior member of staff because it's lightning fast and has access to vast amounts of knowledge, and it generates contents efficiently and effortlessly. And you can also be insanely demanding of it. You can tell it to throw away what would take hours of human work, or take one option out of 20 suggestions and create 20 more based on just that one. you know, you can ask it, you can treat it in the kind of way that would make any human break down, storm out, and then quite possibly sue you for emotional abuse. And in that relentless back and forth, you can actually find a lot of value. So ultimately, for creative or strategic tasks, it's more of a starter for 10 machine, I would say. It's a little bit like the first 10 minutes of a brainstorm where you get the obvious stuff out of the way.
Okay. So it's kind of a keen but overconfident colleague then.
Yeah.
We've all known those in our careers, right? So what's interesting there, though, is it's almost like you're saying that by working with AI, you get a new appreciation for what makes us human.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the, I think quite ironically, that's one of the main reasons why it's hard to estimate how it will impact business culture and even society at large in the long term. You know, humans are still much better than ChatGPT in many things, especially those that requires creativity, critical thinking, and nuanced decision making. You know, in our world, humans are better at ChatGPT at understanding and interpreting complex social and emotional cues, which can be critical in developing effective marketing strategies and messaging that resonates with customers. Humans are also better at contextualizing information and making nuanced decisions based on a range of factors, you know, market trends, customer needs, business goals. And we also have unique perspectives and experiences that feed into our work in profound and often unexpected ways. And one more thing is that, you know, humans, largely speaking, can make fairly astute and intuitive decisions around what would excite, engage, and inspire other humans. And from what I can tell, ChatGPT right now struggles even to identify which bits humans may find more important, let alone interesting. So basically, if we are as intricate and varied as snowflakes, then ChatGPT is kind of like a glass of distilled water. And, you know, I mean, marketing, why I love marketing is that it's an area of robust and sophisticated human, social, cultural interaction and sign activity, the semioticians will call it. And AI in all that just gets lost without our guidance. But as a robot travel companion, it is surprisingly handy.
So what I love about this conversation is we've kind of gone from
an emotional roller coaster, Dave.
It is. So we've gone from everything to, oh my God, it can't do anything. So hallucinations, drifting, pitfalls. So in what ways do you think it's at its most helpful to us right now?
Right. So what I'm going to say will sound a little bit limited and basic, but it really isn't. Where I think it's at its most ready for prime time, so to speak, is that it's an incredible copy editing machine. And notice that I'm not saying copywriting machine, I'm saying copy editing machine. Now, that may sound small, but it isn't. It becomes much better when you feed it some good content to work from. If you just give it a summary or bullet points and say, turn this into a newsletter or blog post, or let alone a white paper, then the results are mediocre and often dull. But if you actually give it a more robust draft of a text, it can then take it and make it more concise and clear for corporate use in quite impressive manners. And as I said before, instantly and for free. And you can even read the version it comes up with and give it iterative feedback. And it never complains about another rewrite or says we'll have to increase the budget, right? It just generates it instantly. So I'll give you a small example, but I was working on a presentation for a specific marketing event, and it was something dealing with some complex subjects, not just ChatGPT, actual some of the actual important work that that I try to do. And that complexity was kind of like creeping into the presentation, as often happens. And the description I then wrote for the program and my email invite about it, I was reading that and I was thinking, my God, that is way too complicated. How do I simplify it? So then I suddenly thought, okay, let's ask ChatGPT. And what I asked it first was not look at this text. I said, have you heard about this event? And lo and behold, it said, yeah, well, I know this event. This event is this event in this city. It happens every year. It brings in this audience. And I said, okay, so here's a paragraph describing a talk that I'm going to give at that event. Can you rewrite it so a broad professional audience could understand it, but please still keep it engaging and not too simple and dull? And it did an excellent job at the first go. But when I read it, it felt a little bit, you know, like, how can I say? It was a little bit North American corporate overenthusiasm, if I'm honest. Right. So I said, can you please make that more understated and British? And boom, a second later, I have an understated British version. And then I look at it and I say, you know, the final part still feels out of scope and overpromising. And I'm not paraphrasing here, Dave. I'm using that level of conversational feedback with it, right? Boom, that's fixed as well. So many such iterative and generative processes that we all do either on our own or with colleagues every day, you know, it would add up for hours to get to perfect. And with it, you get to 95% perfect less than half the time, and then, or less than quarter of the time even sometimes, and then you continue on your own. So now that may sound a slightly pedestrian example, right? But if you step back and think just how much of what we do in marketing and in business today, how much of that is interlinked with content and communications, and how much of what we do is taking our thinking, not the machine's thinking, and turning it into text in various formats. So in that case, this alone for me is very powerful, right? It means it can help you go from top level stuff, like making sure your marketing plan is clear and persuasive, and that you at least have the obvious basis covered, all the way to extracting tweets out of your recent blog post, and then suggesting how to expand that blog post into a white paper. Or, you know, it can make your pitch deck tighter. It can come up with better subject lines for your email. And it can do all of that while reacting to 100% natural conversational language.
So I'm going to push you a bit more here, because this kind of emotional roller coaster, it sounds like you've reined it in a bit, but you're still telling me it fails a lot. You're mm-hmm. still telling me the results can be tricky. So why should we even play with it?
Right. So, you know, here's the one point where I would like to try and be a bit of an evangelist, because I think it's important that we all try and play with it. Now is the time, right? It's just like we had to try email or Excel or PowerPoint or Google or anything, but possibly even more so, right? I mean, imagine a world where the internet exists, but there are no browser, or calculators exist, but the first version of Excel shows up, or Google first arrives on the scene. What you have here is, you know, a proto-general use technology. It's a tool that is potentially limited only by your imagination, but still has almost endless subtlety of both power and pitfalls. And the only way to develop a feel for it is to learn how to use it by playing with it. You may remember when you first started using Google, really early days, and you just look at that text box every now and then, and you suddenly think, oh, so I bet it can search for this. I bet it can search for that. And obviously people who will grow with the technology will do it more naturally. But if you just keep asking yourself, I wonder if it can, And even though the answer will usually be, yes, it can, however, there's always some kind of a pitfall, you learn something. You just learn something.
Okay. But do you, so thinking about the impact on the marketing team then, do you think that talking to the AI is going to become a role that sits in the marketing team?
Well, I mean, I think, again, many people will probably say yes. I am not convinced. Perhaps on some future platforms that are a little bit more sophisticated in how you can manipulate them, but not this one. I mean, I've heard the term prompt engineer mentioned. And honestly, I don't think that's a thing. Writing Google queries isn't search engineering either. But you can aspire to become a power user. And especially with new tech, it can be powerful. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, back in 1998, when I was just starting my career in new media, even my MS Office skills set me apart as more valuable, you know, as a bright spark of a kid that could do more and could do things other couldn't. But I think that's not why it's essential long-term, although marketing juniors can definitely use it to their benefit. I mean, the danger if you're using it as a marketing junior is that you might not notice the mistakes and that could backfire. But really you should just think about it as a new sphere of digital literacy that will likely become extremely important. You know, I mean, there was a time that when writing memos, not everyone had to know how to do it. There was a time where writing presentations wasn't a core skill. And this is not going to be like MS Office skills important. I believe this is going to become the internet important. So what I recommend is that people try asking it for help on typical things that they are asked to do and carefully notice what it can and can't do. Because if you ask it about things you're an expert in, you are less likely to miss any mistakes and problems. And what you'll see is that while it won't always match the quality of human response, it will produce some surprisingly helpful results. And that will allow you to slowly learn how to integrate it into your daily work, and it will save you time. And I think it will save you time. And along the way, it will also to a degree prepare you for the future. And also using it is quite a creative and eye-opening experience. So, you know, who doesn't want more of that in their workday?
Now we're recording this interview over Zoom, and I can see you're looking at your computer screen. Now it could be me who is on the monitor facing you, but I've got to therefore ask you: was any of this interview prepared for you by AI?
Well, Dave, you know, I mean, listening to everything so far, what do you think?
I'm not going to even answer that question, but I have described the setup in your office very accurately, I think, there. And Uwe, thank you so much. And if you want to follow some of Uwe's weird and wonderful experiments with ChatGPT, you can find them right now on his LinkedIn profile. And I have to give a big plug, actually, very specifically for one piece of work that Uwe shared with me in preparation for this podcast, where you kind of tried out this interview through ChatGPT, right? And you'll be sharing online your results.
I invited ChatGPT to come on the podcast as a guest, and it was very interesting to see what happened,
including a very terrifying 2001 Space Odyssey. We had to do it, Dave. Uwe Uechtjen, thank you very much.
You're absolutely welcome, Dave. What a pleasure. Cheers.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Uwe Uechtjen, and thanks to our technical person, Alicia Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org. www.bmc.uk.